the bars at every institution in the world if you want to try. Some of these institutions will say, well, no, we will not admit ministers, and all you have to do is go down and say to the city council, did you know that the general hospital won't admit ministers to the agents? Well, that humorous thing, they need probably the head of the hospital. Not like that. And he said something that city councils know they better not tamper with. The fact of the matter is that the rules of religion had hit a very moral point. It was no longer very effective, the world at large, but it left forms, it left channels, it left ways and means, it left doors open. And actual knowledge in the field of the spirit and the mind and human willingness, when it appeared, it could adapt itself to these already carved channels. You mustn't at any time confuse yourself with somebody who is dwelling in hellfire and damnation. That is not the definition of religion. You may have on your backtrack an unhappy career as priest or heretic or something like that. And I ask you to overcome this because religion is still a respected field, and it is up to you and you alone to make it a higher respected field. You have to fight back and walk all the way up the line from where old time religion left off. But the channels are there, the doors are open, the ways and means exist so that you can walk through the world and do almost anything you please with Scientology if you continue on in the field of Scientology or spiritual science. It's quite important. I'm going to give you some of the things you can do. The visit an insanator. And if you did not like the conditions there, you would complain. And you would complain loud enough to a governor, to a state board, so as to cause the whole administration of that insane asylum to be overturned and reformed along more definitely humanitarian lines. And that's not a little thing that you can do. Since in these institutions throughout the country, they kill several thousand patients a year. They sterilize several thousand more. Take perfectly good, usual, run-of-the-mill cases suffering from a little sadness or grief or apathy, and they confirm their psychosis. These reptogenic psychoses, reptogenic means caused by doctors, and it's a reptogenic psychosis that is more than anything else feeding this country. It is up to somebody such as ourselves to do something about that. If we start to do anything about it, I can assure you that we will soon later generally inherit the entirety of institutional conduct and activity in America. It may be desirable and may not be. You can go into the hospital and you can change the condition of feeding in that hospital. Now that's a big look. That's doing a lot. That's taking a large amount of responsibility. But there are much smaller fields of action, perhaps even more into the reality as far as you're concerned. You can walk into any of these places, have a little perseverance, and knowing to say the right thing at the right time. You'll undoubtedly could fish out of the pond of Mary Meadow. Almost any patient go in. As a minister, you have that right. Man realizes instinctively that the only healing there is comes from the spirit, therefore he has been very careful to leave that road open. Now, that is just in the field of healing. You extend that field of healing to the degree of establishing an office. Establishing a center, rather larger office, and by various rays and moons, most of them centered on the circulation and dissemination of books. Establish yourself a very nice sphere of influence in almost any city. That would be a sort of our personal practice or a clinical practice. You would do that in an additional way. You could recruit people to a personal efficiency course and work in the field of personal efficiency where you improve very nicely and so long as you abided by the rules of the game as to how to handle groups, I can assure you that you will have a continually successful group. You must realize that groups in the past have ebbed and flowed in their membership because the persons running those groups were not well in control of those groups. They were running on a totally permissive, you do what you choose, sort of an attitude, and the group would come, and a group member would stay only on the average of about 8 weeks, and then he would go. Why? Because he'd gotten out of Scientology when he had come into it, so he'd lost some fanatic, or he had buried his life in some fashion. He didn't understand there was anything more there. But if you give PE courses and you educate people that there is more to be had from Scientology than some first fanatic goal, which is rather small and anyhow, you could build yourself up rather larger groups that have been built. But running a PE course entails a great deal of more personal presence and skill on your part than has been routinely demonstrated. So it is quite a trick, quite a trick. You take one PE instructor, and you give him 50 people on a Monday night, and he's going on through the rest of the week, and by Friday night, having lost Tuesday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, he does not have more than two or three people present. And what did he do? He just stood up and talked. He didn't buy his nails, square feet, and the sort of just didn't come back. And then we take another PE instructor, and we start with him Monday night with 50 people, and Friday night he has 76. He's lost only two or three. People came there just for curiosity, didn't have any idea of staying at all, and they didn't stay. But several more in that group that didn't intend to stay did. What's the difference between these two instructors? What's the difference between these two PE group conductors? The administration could be a difference. Administration, what time does the class start, what time does the class break, the proper papers handed out to them in an orderly fashion, they're given their study texts and materials made available to them and so forth. That rather makes for a smooth course and has something to do with it. But it is under the heading of handling human beings. Whether that course wins or loses is determined by the ability of the instructor to handle those people present, his ability to control groups, his ability to confront a group. Now, if all you can do to a group is lecture, I feel so. Then you've talked to them. But that is quite an accomplishment, to be able to stand up with complete relaxation, talk to strange groups of people. That's something all by itself, isn't it? And yet that's not enough to run a successful TV course. If that's all you're going to do, you won't have a course by Friday night. The type of auditing and group defining which was used here by Dr. Barrett keeps the group coming. It takes personal presence to do that. But more important, it takes a complete fearlessness and complete self-confidence that one can continue to control the group no matter what they say. And a person who only lectures to the group does not have the group contributing. And he never gets the group up to contribute to. Never gets it up there. And so it never hangs together as a group. But here we have another factor. Those people in that group are given the right to speak. The one who can only lecture becomes a little bit afraid because it seems to them that the group is going out from under his control. If he lets this one talk, and that one talk, and another one talk, and another one talk, he feels as though the group is departing from under his control. If he has tendencies, shut them off, and knock them below, contribute to him. Therefore, they never contribute to him. They never contribute to the organization. And they simply go away. Quite interesting, isn't it? Fascinating. It's actually a difference on ability to control. The one who lost all of the students, who lost all of the people who enrolled, was that will be found and willing to control groups which let itself talking back. That's what it amounts to. You've got to be able to let that group talk back and still knock them back into control again. You've got to be able to start telling them to stop them. You've got to be able to turn around to this person and that in the group and tell them to talk and tell them to shut up. With good ARC. And we say to a large group like this, what do you suppose the definition is for the word create? How would you define this word create? What is create? Who's the first one that speaks up? Usually in a new strange group, it'll be somebody who is brash. He just speaks up on an automaticity. Usually some compulsive outflow, prompting. Well, are you going to let him talk for the rest of the week? How much can this man say? How much can let him say? Will you let him say enough to offer a definition? And the second that he has offered anything that vaguely sounds like a definition, you shut him off with the rest of the group. How do you do that? You simply turn around to the rest of the group and ask, do you think that's right? And of course, they don't want to be identified either. You know, the big crime of the universe is communicate. The other crime is to be there. They're doing both. You're asking them to communicate, and they're already there, and that's pretty brave. So don't expect that they will answer up all at once or something like that. They won't. You have to point your finger at the little girl on the aisle, and you have to say, do you agree with that? Or would you say, speak up? Well, no, I don't think I do. Well, how would you define it? The other fellow still may be talking. You yourself don't feel that you can put the clamps on the entirety of the group. You can always put the group under the control of the group. What are you going to do? I use both methods. I take a group, starting to talk, it's getting unruly, it's doing this, doing that. And I just make the rest of the group shut up both and do them on talking. It's very easy to have it. You keep talking to him, do you agree with that? Is that your idea of it? Just like Dr. Barrett. He'll find out a group stays under control. And that method of teaching a preview course or knocking into the heads of people who are brand new in the subject is so superior to straight lecturing that it cannot be compared. There's just a world apart. So what would you do if you went into an additional field now, not running a PE course, but you went around to the Greg Trahan College, and you said, I ran a business vision series office, and I'm an expert on efficiency, learning rate, teaching people, that's right, I'm a science part of it. That would be pretty easy to learn. Too impressive to be overlooked. That once want to know what a complicated word like that means. And, you say, you don't know what that means. Well, that's the science of knowing how to know. Well, that's the science of controlling people. Didn't you know that? Anything you want to define it as, but you give them some sort of a definition that tells them that there is something to know about this. And then you say, I would be very happy to volunteer my services if your students have a little time one night this week, and I would like to talk to them. And they say, well, kind of, what's in this for us? And you say, nothing. This is an added service. Maybe someone will then come over and take one of my courses. Maybe some of the people who are taking my courses would like to come over and take some of their courses. And the head of the Dragon College said, well, what do you know? That's a good idea. Somebody willing to scratch my back by statute, they'll go on and talk. You say, I'll put up your sign on my bulletin board. If you put up my sign, your sign on mine, they're all okay. This is very easy, by the way. It takes a little personality. It's very easy to take these commercial colleges and schools and get on and talk to them at life. And what do you do? Stand up and say, blah, 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 turn the tables on them. Turn the tables on them. Say, hey, what creates me? So he's asking me, well, if I have a hypothetical question, he's going to answer the problem. And you don't. And that surprises me. And this approach is so startling and so new that it all by itself becomes rather therapeutic. Quite interesting. You get a lot of this in your auditory and preacher conference, but you really don't know how much these do at large or a group. Some of you give this minor advice. Even giving reports one after the other. There is such a thing as relaying information to people. But people at large don't have that many attention units to fire, and they very often don't listen. People have to be really upscale to hear what you say. And the way to get them there, as is demonstrated by the before or after curve drawn on groups on which this agreement method has been used, tell us that these people come up to a point where they can hear. You could lecture to them after that. After they've had 2 or 3 weeks or so, then they finally listen to them. It's quite amazing. But this method could be used on an army group. You don't care whether they're friendly or unfriendly. It doesn't matter. They'll be friendly very shortly. They don't want to know what you're getting at. And you get somebody to define that. Don't be driven into a defensive position. And don't go into an obsessive communication with the 2 or 3 of the group that obsessively communicate. Learn after a while that there are certain people in the group who won't communicate at all. There are certain people who communicate on an average. And there are certain people who communicate all the time. You'd only find yourself talking to the last group. Don't do that. Take the average one from 2 in the low ones. Spot somebody who's sitting back in a corner, a little mousy-looking man with former intestines. He's been sitting there and he had been saying, things, all evening. Now you say, you, sir. He's back there in the corner. Yes, you. Now what is your definition of being? And he said, well, you've been sitting there a long time, and I know that you must have observed quite a bit. You've thought about this quite a bit. Give us the benefit of what you have established in your own mind. Ah, you can get enough, and he's asking you to contribute. Well, it's done. Has to be pretty smooth, has to have a good high ARC. But there's always the group, the top, the group. Even a bunch of juvenile delinquents shipped into the army just to get rid of them. Even a bunch of London cops has been handled successfully on this basis. Teaching by definition has been handled with great success. London cops, mind you, that were completely out of the control of a London club, were brought in and made the defiance. They listened. And the boys that ran that club that tried to keep these little cops off the streets, mama the prostitute, daddy the burglar, this sort of social lover, were absolutely flabbergasted with the Scientology ministers. They wanted to know what kind of stuff was it that made people like this, who could actually handle and control such a large group of ordinary, unruly, insulting young blacks. He actually wasn't doing much control on this, and we simply asked them to contribute, and they did. They asked him to explain a few things, and he did. We asked them to explain a few things, and they did. And they became the best of friends. First time anybody ever used communication on this group. New and startling innovation all by itself, much less getting them to define things. So there is no level to which this type of group handling cannot be addressed. I don't know what kind of a lecture Dr. Richie Steves gave last night out in Bethesda, or wherever it was. But he talked to a women's club. And I don't know what he said to them. I don't know what he asked them. But this morning on the phone, a probation officer who has 19,000 juvenile delinquents under her thumb was trying to get in touch with Dr. Steve so that our counseling service could be employed officially. That's interesting, isn't it? Suppose you were out some
going to get any free squares? How's any money coming out of this? I mean, how am I ever going to live if something is first? Doesn't appear you don't assume enough control of the society to make it contribute to you. That's what I was going to ask. You don't let it contribute to you. You want to call in people and process them individually without anything else. If you want to call in groups and talk to them. And that's all we're going to do. We've never gotten enough to contribute to you. You won't be supported. You'll have a bad time. It's an interesting thing that the founding church itself has been very successful in starting new offices and so forth. That is because we are hounds today on the subject of smooth, precise administration. We are mean on the subject. And we are also mean on the subject of contribute. And if we train people, and if we process people, and if we bring people into groups, we ask that they pay their bills. And this itself seems to be therapeutic. There's an organization which permits, that gives them service quite overtly, and they are permitted to give the organization both the benefit of their services and money. They give information service, they give money service. It works out, but nobody running a sloppy administration line will ever make it. The administration alone will defeat it. Actually, it was the inability to administer such an enormously large, much-running organization with no formed plan of administration which caused the collapse of federal organizations back in 1960. There were people there who were experts who had been brought in from large corporations in the field of administration, but we found out that large corporations don't know how to administer. It requires a level of precision and assignment of time quite foreign to most companies and organizations to run time policy. You have to be much better than the society as a whole to make enough impression on them so that they know you're there. How do they know you're there? You start to change and stop them by administration. The administration is prompt. The class begins at 7:30, not 7:31 or 7:29. It runs for an hour. Runs for an hour, maybe in a break. It runs for an hour and a question period. But it runs on an agreed upon basis, and it runs. Now that's all part and parcel of administration. A slip of paper for everybody that says he's there is administration. Answering your mail. Answering your phone call. You don't think people would try to stay in business as a professional auditor, do you? And not answer their mail and not answer their phone calls. Nobody'd be foolish enough to do that. No, I'm afraid that everybody is that foolish. In London, an auditor was complaining to me that he was having difficulty with his practice. He was in an individual practice level. Having difficulty with practice, and I said, well, how many phone calls do you get a day? Oh, he says, I'm out so much. Oh, I said, well, you have an answering service, don't you, or something. No. Well, I said, how long has it been since you made sure that all of your mail was up to date? Since I haven't got time to fool with that. You haven't got time to fool with that, and you're just telling me you haven't now got a practice. It consists of communication lines between you and the public. Your communication of the lines of the public is to a small degree. An individual, to a little better degree, a group will assemble and keep them communicating to the public. And a much better degree, you're moving yourself from where you are out to groups, out to various activities, circulating yourself, communicating. And then if you've communicated, why neglect the fruits of your communication? You answer your mail. You make sure your telephone gets answered. Those seem to be elementary steps, but they are very visually overlooked. If you have an ad to call you between 4 and 7, do you think the public is going to call you between 4 and 7? No. Nonsense. They call you at 9, they call you at 12, they call you at 3, and they're very upset and they don't call back if you're not there at 3, even though you said between 4 and 7. The public is an undisciplined matter. hardly need the air. I can't tell you any of the tales in the air. You know how little they see. Great big signs stretched across the road with enormous black and white stripes. Sawhorses saying, detour. Points to the right. A little hole at the end of the sawhorses that a car can get through and around. And the pavement goes on for about a mile and then dead end. I lived one time in exactly the end of a dead-ended pavement, and a detour sign, as the custom of most public works, was there for almost a year and a half. And every day, five or six people would stop at the house and say, "What happened to the road?" The letters on that sign were 20 inches high. I measured them. How did they miss it? Well, don't think they're going to read a classified ad or your booklet. They even get your address wrong, and they get all sorts of other things wrong. You're only getting the upper class, the higher strata, who can remember your phone number long enough to put it on the dial. That's the public. You've got to answer up when you're called. And you've got to answer your communication from every street by mail. And you've got to keep that right up to snuff. And someday the infernal ravening comes along and says to you, how is it that you return for the umpteenth of jump tumble all reflect a minus quotient when we have a millionaire over here that says he paid you $28,726? You haven't got any financial and banking records. They didn't take you away, they throw you in jail, and they do a price tax to your minister because the infernal ravening is a product of the devil. So when you get any money in, you write down in a receipt book, which costs 50 cents or a dollar or two, which has carbon copies, you give the person that gave you the money a white slip. And you put the yellow over in the file, and you keep the white, transparent, or whatever is left in the book. You keep that in the book. When you pay it bill, you pay it by check. You don't pay it by cash. And if you never send these things in the books, you still have a complete set of books bearing them. You have all the money you received, because that came in and was represented in invoice. And you have all the money you disperse because that's represented in checkbooks and bank statements. And nobody's ever going to push it up against the wall, or even the priest. He can come in and say, "Remember the $596 that I paid you." He didn't. You say, "Well, as you receive." That is elementary business, isn't it? Keep it elementary. Don't build it up into a huge pyramid of horror. But we have to take these business-like steps. If a sign appears on an office door you have rented somewhere, that you are there between 9 and 12 every morning, please have somebody there between 9 and 12. And if you don't intend to be there, take the sign off the door and say, "Sometimes." In other words, a professional attitude is best represented by the elementary steps taken by a professional, regardless of what you're doing. And those steps are consistent, making it possible to receive communication, making it possible to get those communications answered and keeping them answered, taking care of the money communication line by invoicing all of the incoming money and paying all of your bills by check. And you just don't lose from there on. You just stop about 90% of the randomity out of your life right that minute. Gone. Not even spend your time on building up the practice of running a group. Your best bet these days to assemble a group, to assemble a practice, happens to be Scientology. The problem is worse than Scientology, the fundamentals of thought. And 100 copies of either one can be bought for very little money. About $35, $100. Getting these spread around requires legwork. Don't think there's anything in this universe that is completely easy to do. worthwhile fun. There's always the pathways, and there's always up. That's the way this universe is built. Take it inside. People around here were placing Scientology problems in work and their own projects in drugstores. They bought a whole batch of them. They were placing them in drugstores, a couple of people. Two separate projects here. And for days and days and days and days and days, there wasn't one single one of them disappeared off any counter anyway. And what a lot of work it was to make the druggists accept them, because they didn't fit the rack. But we had ideas of exactly how the book should look in order to be put on the rack, and exactly how it should look in order to be sold, and how it should have a naked woman on the cover. And he had big ideas about the whole thing. That he is dead wrong, and that he's not selling books. That's beside the point. He had an awful lot of interesting ideas. And I dare say the bookseller's ideas, the bookstore ideas, are interesting. But remember this, they don't sell books. The magazines would move off Safeway, grocery store racks, and Rexall drugstore racks are so smite as to be negligible. If a book in this country only has to sell 5,000 or 6,000 copies to be a bestseller, it tells you that the thousands and thousands of bookstores in this country do not know how to merchandise. Now, usually, you can work at the reverse. You say, well, if they do it that way, that must be the way that it should be done. But this is not true in the field of the written word, in the field of publication. I know, I was once the president of the American Fiction Guild. I conducted a survey of merchandising of magazines and books, and I found out that they were totally dedicated to the most unworkable method. If you want a magazine or a book to sell, it's got to be a different size. They'll have to locate it someplace else, then, and it won't be sold. The other thing is, it's got to be put there so painlessly and collected for so painlessly that nobody is disturbed. So a complicated administrative system in placing books and drugs for it is definitely not indicated. And some of these drugstore owners and so forth don't want it because they say, well, look, it won't fit on the rack and it's the wrong color and so forth, and I couldn't sell that anyway, and I'll have to put it up here by the cash register. You say, you really got an idea there. We'll put it the cash register. Well, go ahead, leave it there. These kids had a hard time getting books into drugstores and so forth, but they made it. And for days and days and days, not a single copy sold. Nothing happened at all. There was nothing moving at all. It was just one long, endless calm lag as far as they were concerned. And all the work was for nothing. And all of a sudden, they started to sell. By the time they'd worn out two pairs of shoes walking around all of the drugstores they had listed up and written down in their little memo book, just about that time, it all of a sudden started to pay off. But remember, it had worn out two pairs of shoes. And these books are now selling all around town now, one way or another. The books are starting to sell. The last word I saw on this, starting to sell rather well. If you stamped into those books, those 100 books you had, your name and address, how you could be reached, for local information on this subject, call so-and-so, such-and-such a phone number, such-and-such an address. Stamp it into the books, put the books around. You'll find out the books will all sell. Eventually, you collect most of the money that's owed to you, put them in our consignment. Say, now look, I've given you 15 books, I'm here. I'm going to come back, and you do, and you come back, and there's 14 books. You tell a fellow you owe me $1, or you owe me 50 cents. You place it in there at about a 50% discount, and they'll like it. All right, that existence of your name and telephone number in those books that they distribute around about the place gives you people who will then call you back. A book is better than personal contact in the United States. Because what people say is not believed, and what people read is believed.
successfully unsuccessful distribution program on the subject of books, and that you could spend money and too much money on advertising, which did not pay off. And you choose the wrong district, you could say, well, sell these books as Park Avenue. We never sell anything down here on the West End. Park Avenue, maybe it was Park Avenue. And that area down around the Battery, where they have all those clothing secondhand stores, that's where they know books would sell down there. And your judgment could be wrong. They might sell on Park Avenue. They might sell on West End. They might sell down on the Battery. And you just sort of source it out and take the chance. In Ireland, constant argument with the young Scientologist over there on the subject of ad placement. Had to be utilized to overcome his prejudice about putting it in the labor paper. And with sole support of the American College Personnel Efficiency Dublin, for a very long time came exclusively from the longshoremen of Dublin. They were the only people who showed up and stuck. They didn't like telling me. Walk in there. Listen. Hear this. Listen. Left, top, straight around. They were there every night. Nice and clean. Next crew that showed up, see, they kept on coming. Another step on coming. The next crew that showed up at the behest of a brewmaster. He took all the people working around his brewery, and he figured they needed something. And he didn't know what, and maybe he had it, and he herded them in down there wholesale. And these people, the janitors and the rest of them, were absolutely top. They, after all, were people who could exert enough energy to work. Would it be wrong? In England, a lot of upper crust, screen stars, stage stars, has taken Scientology and they're doing wonderfully with it. If you read the English papers, it's quite customary that so-and-so, Hog Harden,